up-and-coming decade of automobile electronics for semiconductor manufacturers. 1971 by Jeffrey C. Winkle, Director of Integrated Microsystems, Fairchild Semiconductor, a division of Fairchild Camera and Instrument Corporation. Today, more than at any other time in its history, the automotive industry has a large spotlight focused on it by the consumer, by the government, and by various independent groups. In the engine compartment, progressively tougher controls for the emissions of hydrocarbons, carbon monoxide, and nitrous oxide can be partially met with a breaker ignition system, using a magnetic pickup to substitute for the ignition breaker points. In fuel management, the same sets of rules which make spark plug timing important also apply at the fuel-air mixture control point. There will be a number of new designs in the passenger compartment. There are separate tachometer and speed controls, and separate electric controls for such items as the heater, air conditioner, wiper blades, interior and exterior lighting, and probably a safety crash airbag. Also, we expect to see a type of radar protection, perhaps using our new low-cost gun diode microwave sources, which I think will provide the breakthrough needed to develop inexpensive radar and absolute speed measuring devices. In the driver's instrumentation readouts, we see either a trend towards panels of driver alerting lights or a single readout device, probably solid state or solid state driven, which will call attention to the unsafe conditions or to items requiring maintenance. Following this, there will be systems utilizing solid-state read-only memories to display not only the problem, but also instructions to the driver or mechanics on what action should be taken to correct it. We have made great many strides forward in the production of light-emitting gallium arsenide diodes, which require very little power to display red or green numbers or letters. These will cycle many times a second, so they could be used to display pulsed readouts of a number of functions. In the chassis area, we see semiconductors providing better sensors and controls for shifting in automatic transmissions and better controls for leveling the car under varying load conditions. It also could easily incorporate an anti-nosedive system into the same electronics, as well as automatic compensation of springing for various road conditions. These would be in addition to the radar controlled system I have just mentioned. After 1976, we expect to see all of these functions as absolute speed sensing and anti-collision sensing combined into one electronic module. We predict that by the 1980s, you will be having us put all of these control modules in one place and call it something like the automotive central processor. This ACP would use a central LSI control device communicating with all encode and decode stations throughout the car. When new designers start working with the automotive central processor, we think you will find a wide degree of flexibility because the incremental costs of adding functions will be small. The cost of additional electronic functions in the processor will be so small that you will probably purchase them as standard units and will only change the number of encode and decode stations between autos of different models and prices. Using ACP will drop the cost of the wiring harness tremendously, and you'll be able to say goodbye to the nearly 1 mile of wire per vehicle you are now using. I will use the electronic fuel injection system as an example. It is chosen because it represents a fairly complex control function requiring a degree of low-cost accuracy which can be mass-produced only by using semiconductor devices. First, let's discuss the sensor portion of the fuel injection system. The representative system has three basic types of input sensors: pressure sensing, either differential or absolute or reference; position sensing, crankshaft position, for instance; and temperature sensing. The pressure sensor is most useful for determining the manifold pressure for the fuel injection system. There are a number of alternates open to us within the silicon system technology. 1. Direct silicon diaphragm. 2. Conventional diaphragm linked to a light-emitting diode phototransistor target arrangement. Or 3. The conventional diaphragm linked to any one of a number of position sensing elements. Here we recommend the most simple sensor form, the silicon strain gauge. I think it is sufficient to say that the unit is superior to anything now in volume production for accuracy, reliability, and low cost. It relies on the flexure of a single crystal silicon diaphragm to stress a diffused resistor bridge. The diaphragm is held in place by a relatively massive constraint system of the same silicon material. Applied pressure causes the value of the resistances in the bridge to change, resulting in a signal output at its measurement points. Now I come to a most important factor, the general automotive control system noise problem. We often see ourselves in the position of attempting to extract a control signal that be as low as 5/1000th of a volt from a location that is physically near the engine ignition system, which is capable of creating electrical noise of over 30,000 volts. This means that by any slight coupling between the ignition system noise and the wiring harness, between the sensor and the control box, will completely obscure the desired signal. The magnitude of this problem can be reduced by almost two orders by using some of the unstressed and unused silicon area under the constraint ring. Here we can construct an amplifier which is capable of accurately raising the 5 millivolt signal to the 5 volt region. Since the connect wires between the amplifier and the sensing bridge are only that small fraction of an inch, the opportunity for ignition noise interference at the lowest single level is practically eliminated. This should give you an idea of the general kind of techniques we will use to meet automotive control requirements. We have a number of elements which, by using their structural integrity and immunity from long-term degradation effects, most are practically single crystals of rigid silicon, have the inherent reliability required to give them lifetime longer than the associated mechanical components. For example, in the manifold pressure application, peak pressures due to the induction system backfire of over 100 pounds per square inch are tolerated without any appreciable loss of accuracy in its normal operating range of from 15 pounds per square inch absolute to 1 pound per square inch absolute. Moving member transduction is a second very important sensed phenomenon. 1. Light-emitting diodes coupled with phototransistors or photolinear integrated circuits in either reflected or transmitted forms. 2. Hall effect integrated circuit transducers associated with permanent magnets. And 3. Gun effect transmitter, useful for their insensitivity to dirt and for their ability to measure to a small tolerance from a distance. For the true sequential electronic fuel injection system, figure 7, in which each injector operates at the optimum time for the associated cylinder, we see the need for a marker for every two rotations to check synchronization of the system at the end of each engine operating control cycle. A second form of the EFI system uses markers for every 1 degree or half degree of crankshaft rotation. Although we could use any of the techniques I just named, the system we have experimented with leads us to believe that the best cost-performance trade-off favors the use of gallium arsenide light-emitting diodes, light source in which illuminated position markers are mounted on the distributor housing or directly on the crankshaft. The reflected light from the markers shines back onto either a phototransistor or a photosensitive integrated circuit pickup, which is essentially a phototransistor pickup with a built-in amplifier, needed to help solve the signal noise problem again. The pickup produces a signal that tells the control when one of the markers passed the light-sensitive area. The peak spectral output of the gallium arsenide source is at about 900 angstroms, or approximately the point in the infrared spectrum that matches the response of a silicon phototransistor. Therefore, the transfer of light energy from the source to the sensor is most efficient. Our initial tests indicate that surface contamination due to oil and other hydrocarbon vapors is relatively transparent at this wavelength light. A second moving member transducer for the fuel injection system is a throttle position sensor.
Here, a string of phototransistors in the vicinity of the air valve for the intake manifold responds to a single light-emitting diode mounted on the throttle linkage. Finally, I would like to mention the temperature transducer function. Silicon diodes, which could measure cylinder head temperature and intake air temperature, are best used in the vicinity of an existing amplifier for cost improvement or for applications in which better accuracy and long-term stability are needed. Now let's look at the signal processing part of our control system. In the case of electronic fuel injection, this function could be divided according to the types of parts used into the analog and digital sections. In the analog portion, the input signal from the sensors is fed into a curved shaping section, which is essentially a memory location for storing the engine's demands in response to any predictable set of input conditions. Here, we can store the injector on time required at a certain RPM throttle position, manifold absolute pressure condition, and cause the injectors to so respond whenever these conditions are duplicated in actual operation. Of course, a single set of on-time determining components, RC elements, should be used to generate the signal for all injectors so that there is a minimal cylinder-to-cylinder variation. We expect that the analog portion of any typical fuel injection system will have about 5 or 6 custom linear integrated circuits. The on-time information is encoded into a form that can be used by the following digital system. The digital part of the fuel injection system takes the on-time information from the analog system and the crankshaft position information from the phototransistor pickups and applies the signal to the injector driver transistors. We predict that a reasonable system for doing this would include a custom MOS large-scale integrated array and a custom bipolar interface element. The custom MOS large-scale array is actually a computer on a chip, which can include as many as 1,500 transistors and resistors on a single piece of silicon. Our aim is to develop systems which will require the service technician to merely plug in a test box which exercises the system and checks for all failure modes. System performance will be shown by a simple go, no-go light arrangement. Enunciated malfunctions will be accompanied by clear instructions to replace a certain part of the system. The availability of light-emitting diodes also makes it possible to have inherently self-diagnosing systems. During the field test of a new design, it is particularly useful to have light-emitting diode lights that indicate the condition of a certain key logic stages in digital portions of the circuit. We look forward to car-wide self-analysis systems when the central processor multiplexing developments come to pass. Until then, the added cost of the logic needed to go through self-check functions will probably be excessively expensive. We have reviewed a number of automobile manufacturer specifications in the various systems which have a high probability of usage in the car. As a result of this review and of our own work, we have begun to define the 3 intrinsically different control environments. 1. The underhood environment in the standard car and in the thermal reactor equipped car. 2, the passenger compartment instrument panel environment, which is somewhat milder. And 3, the chassis environment, which might be fairly similar to the under-the-hood environment, except that some of the packaging requirements may be more stringent. All of the automotive OEM specifications we have seen have a key phrase or paragraph which says, in effect, the limits given in this specification are for test only. The system described here must operate in the vehicle under all field operator conditions to be acceptable. This means that we must design something that will live in the environments rougher than many of the toughest military conditions we have seen, and must encounter unpredictably bad operating conditions with unpredictably bad maintenance administrated by unbelievably unskilled persons, or with no maintenance at all. To this end, I would like to make a proposal that we set up a joint group under the sponsorship of both the Society of Automotive Engineers and the IEEE to spell out the automotive control system operating environment in such a way that we as a total industry have a solid handle on the types of functions our controls will be asked to perform, on the types of operating environments we will use, and on the test methods we will be used to establish acceptable system performance in the three principal environments. I realize that this will not be a short-term effort, but the various joint electron device engineering councils of the Electronics Industry Association illustrate that the basic approach can work to establish conditions that would save a great deal of needless duplication in the development of control systems which will better fill your 6 performance targets needs. Safety, to lower the needless cost of life on the nation's highways. Ecology, to uphold the quality of the air we breathe and the world we see. Reliability, to establish and keep owner confidence in the products we manufacture, and to keep the maintenance cost down. Warranty, cost minimization to keep the stockholder happy. Cost control in the initial production without significant compromises in our other performance targets, and service, convenience to keep the operator's operating cost down after the end of the warranty period. Today, the automobile business has the opportunity to tap the benefits accrued from the tens of billions of dollars invested by the military, aerospace, and computer industries over 2 decades in the development of a reliable and sophisticated line of control products. We offer the ability to convert our knowledge in primary semiconductor design, in advanced transducer design, and in manufacturing technology into a series of functional subsystems producible in volume.
We have left it to Charlie Phipps of TI to be the anchor man for the formal part of the session.
Thank you, Chuck. It's late. I'll move along rapidly. We have a materials division or group of TI that is concerned with cladding metals. And they've been focusing on solutions to problems of the wiring, cabling, brake tubing, the finishing in terms of aluminum and chrome on the car. We have a controls group that's concerned with bimetallic elements or controls, level sensing, motor protectors, this type of thing. And the semiconductor operations, which I represent, and my talk will focus on the semiconductor applications for the car. One thing that is very evident to us in the industry is that we have a much stronger base and are poised to serve applications like automotive today to a higher level and a greater confidence than ever before. And these are some of the factors why. So it is a high-volume industry. The industry is worldwide, and I'll touch upon this point because I think it's important. And that, from our viewpoint, we think it's integrated circuit technology that will really provide the thrust and momentum for placing electronics in the car if it's going to fit in the car and where it does fit in the car and find a solution. One factor that you may not be aware of, in the past year, the semiconductor industry became a truly international industry. For the first time in its history, more than 50% of the semiconductor devices were produced outside the United States. You can see how it's shifted in the past decade, particularly a rapid shift in the last part of the decade. It's our projection that this trend will continue so that more and more of semiconductor production occurs outside the United States. Now, it's not just production. Technology goes along with this. And the semiconductor plants outside of the United States do have good technical skills. Their markets, their customers are demanding current applications of semiconductor technology to their applications and problems also. There no longer is a time lag or technical leadership necessarily on the part of the United States semiconductor producer, the United States equipment firm in applying the technology as compared to their counterparts elsewhere in the world. Along with this, the United States semiconductor industry certainly got a thrust and a boost late 50s and early 60s from the government, particularly Department of Defense. The orientation of our billings in the United States, first in 60, highly oriented to the military, but in the past 3 to 5 years here in the States, more and more of our technical and product thrust has been to the computer and industrial segment, or non-military. If you look elsewhere in the world, they did not have a military base, and their product thrust, product application work, has always been focused on industrial and consumer application of electronics. So the semiconductor industry, both here in the States and Europe and Japan, is focusing very heavily on high-volume consumer applications, particularly here in the States for the first time in the past few years in really the history of the semiconductor industry. Now, another aspect of the why semiconductors can provide a solution for the car and why it's timely is that we have achieved really higher and higher levels of producibility of our more complex semiconductor devices. On this chart, we show for the industry as a whole, all semiconductor producers, the amount of silicon material that they use to ship 1,000 devices. In other words, it's a reflection of your yield and process efficiency. In the past 3 or 4 years, since 1968, the most remarkable part of it is that for the integrated circuits, the amount of silicon usage per 1,000 devices has decreased by a factor of 4 times. At the same time, the complexity of these devices was increasing, and the amount of silicon area per given bar was larger each year than the preceding year because of complexity. But yet, there's a fourfold reduction in silicon usage for circuits, and that we are projecting that this will continue to decline in terms of further improvements of producibility. So the individual MOS device on one chip is about equivalent to a city block on a scale of 3 million to 1, covering the greater part of the city of New York. An MOS device, well, the critical factors is the very thin oxide that we form over the device of about 1,000 to 1,200 angstrom thickness. On the same scale, well, that's equivalent to a layer about 1 foot thick over a city block. If in any city block in the city of New York, you have this 1 foot layer, if you had a defect in any one of those blocks of 1 foot in diameter, the device would be defective and you'd lose the entire chip. You can imagine, geographically speaking, the city of New York with no defects of 1 foot in diameter on any city block, begins to give you the scale. Similarly, on the MOS device are the metal interconnections. These are 4/10 mil wide. Going to the city of New York scale, that's equivalent to a side street 110 feet wide. Again, if there is an imperfection in this metal interconnection, a crack or a fracture, that's equivalent to a city street that has a crack in it across one of these side streets, where the crack is less than 1 foot wide on any street in the city of New York, the equivalent MOS device is defective and is not acceptable. This type of device is being made by the semiconductor industry in the hundreds of thousands per month at good yield and high producibility and consequently low cost. Even so with this, as John Weldy so dramatically told you, that semiconductor prices decline year after year. We follow very much learning curve theory, where you take your cumulative production volume base, and each time that doubles, your prices and cost will decline by a predetermined amount. Learning curve theory in itself applies to a number of industries, but what's so unusual about the semiconductor industry is the degree of the slope. Our slopes are generally in the 70%, sometimes the 65%, and occasionally getting down the 50% range. This means that each time you double your cumulative manufacturing base in units, that your average price will decline by the degree of that slope. So if you're going down a 70% slope, you produce 10 million units and your average price is $10, your average price for the next increment, 10 million units, will be $7. Now, this is the type of thing that we experience. It's very predictable. We can ascertain it and predict it for 2, 3, 5 years out, as long as we can estimate the volume base that will occur. And as a consequence, we need to get ready, and we do, and we invest very heavily in manufacturing technology so that we can be competitive and follow these slopes. And it does require large manufacturing investments in technology year after year after year after year. And it's the one thing that the number of venture and smaller companies do miss. They feel they can come into the business, come in to a technology change at a price level, and hold that price level and capture a business and make margins over a 3 or 5 years period of time. And they don't realize that that learning curve is going to push that price down month after month during that period of time. And this is as characteristic as anything there can be in the semiconductor industry. Along with this manufacturing base, there's been a related improvement in the reliability. I won't dwell on it. It's been touched upon. This is just a plot of the reliability of an integrated circuit package. On an individual circuit level, it's even more dramatic because the complexity of the circuits and the function within that package have been continually increasing. So these are some of the factors I touched upon as to why I feel the semiconductor industry today is really ready and eager to serve the type of application represented by you folks. There are some performance trends that you can use to project even a better probability that we can solve many problems, at least partially, through the application of semiconductors. I don't want to distort the perspective. I don't think semiconductors solve everything or do everything, but I think they can be used very gainfully in conjunction with mechanical devices, other actuators and controls. When it comes to certainly signal processing and power, we can do it quite well. We still need some innovations in the sensing area to do it well. There are four particular trends I'd like to highlight. The one of complexity has been talked about, and this is just an example of the type of chip that's used for a calculator. Again, that's dimension there, about 160 mils on a side, and the type of package that we put it in for the calculators. These are, as I said, were being produced by the industry in the hundreds of thousands per month at the current time. Another important trend that touches upon the automotive application is that it's only within the past few years, and here in the United States, really, the momentum's just getting underway this year, that integrated circuits are finally being applied to the TV sets. We have gained sufficient control of our processes and integrated circuits that we can establish good performance in linear integrated circuits. We can group the circuits, place them in a package, so that we can offer a better solution, a more economical solution to one of the more demanding electronic requirements, and that is of color TV or consumer electronics. And this is underway at the present time, another indication of the base of the semiconductor industry. A third one, which is just beginning and I think is really going to be vital to solving the types of problems that are discussed here tonight, that is that we're beginning to combine integrated circuits with power devices. In a car, practically everything you do has to come out at some power level. And you can do it with individual power transistors, individual integrated circuits, but I think the real solutions over any period of time are going to come with combining these two. Their products are beginning to appear in the marketplace. This is an example of a core driver. Its output is 600 milliamps, greater than 40-volt breakdown. This is just the beginning, but I think it's very real, and I think it presents one of the real thrusts of giving viable solutions to a lot of these control circuitry problems. The fourth area, that is equally exciting, perhaps the most exciting of all, is that of solid-state displays. And we think liquid crystal is probably the greatest promise for impacting the car. The liquid crystal display offers the lowest cost potential of any solid-state display. It's very flexible from a styling viewpoint, put color filters over it, you can use images, you can use alphanumerics. It operates from relatively low voltages. It is consistent in its driving with integrated circuit technology as far as driving the display. We think this opens up a whole new era of applications to the panel-type displays, and you fellas have a lot need and you use a lot of panel displays. And we think that this is something that will have impact in the automotive industry looking ahead in the next decade. Now, with this space and some of these performance trends, the question may be asked, well, will the consumer accept electronics? Or can electronics really be applied to the critical functions of the cars? The thing that Chuck Simmons talked about in the beginning, looking at the history, we've sort of been toying with semiconductors. We use the entertainment functions in the radio, and the applications he talked about have largely been the non-critical functions. They can go out or something happen, and the safety and performance of the car is not greatly impaired. You and I in our homes have not really largely been exposed to electronics other than in TV or perhaps in entertainment media to date. During the coming decade, though, this is one of the great potentials for our industry, and that is to bring electronics into the household, into the consumers, in a non-entertainment fashion. I think over the next 3 to 5 years, the consumer will be much more aware of electronics, and he will accept electronics, and he will expect and demand the convenience of electronics. Looking at your industry, you perhaps have more of electronics environment about you than you realize. Machine tools have used numerical controls using integrated circuits that made them possible for some 4 or 5 years now. The computers you use for your production planning, your tremendous material movements and scheduling, your order entering, shipping and devices are all made possible largely because of semiconductors and their real thrust in the past 5, 6 years because of integrated circuits. Electronic diagnostic equipment becoming more and more common in service areas. And the instrumentation that is used both in your factory lines and assembly lines and elsewhere leans heavily, more and more heavily, on electronics and data processing. The product itself, the automobile, probably, as Chuck suggested, the least furthest along in penetration, and for good reason. The applications that have been cited and talked about, or they're underway at the present time, are largely what I'd call single function or single problem type of application for electronics, where individual problems are highlighted and attacked individually. It's a way to get started. It's a way to marry semiconductors to mechanical and other devices. And this is what's underway. More can be done, and there's much more potential to semiconductors than attacking things on a single function basis. I'd like to use an example, and the example was the electronic calculator. The first electronic calculators appeared some 5 years ago using discrete semiconductors, transistors, and diodes, largely just for the logic. They priced around $2,000. A year or so later, integrated circuits were applied to the logic with a subsequent reduction down under $1,000. Then they began to pick up the accumulators and delay lines, the drivers for the displays. Continued advances were made. Until most recently, the small calculator at the far right available were semiconductors, provide the total solution to logic, to memory, to drive, thermal printhead for the readout. A matter of about 4 or 5 pieces of semiconductor provide all the functions of the calculator. So it's seen in this period of time for these functions a change not only in styling and size, but a very dramatic cost reduction. And this is just the beginning. The small calculator is really just starting in manufacturing for the next few years. That type of calculator, I think, will be readily available at many stores for less than $100. Once a critical mass of electronics or signal processing is achieved, one of the characteristics are that this signal processing can be shared by many functions. And the sharing can be done at very small incremental cost. And again, this is the calculator situation. Once you have an electronic calculator, it costs you very little incremental cost to add additional functions to it. The same analogy holds for many other problems, and some of the problems we're talking about this evening as far as electronics in the car. The problem is, though, getting that first initial critical mass of electronics, a sufficient amount of electronics or signal processing in the car, so that it can begin to be shared and other incremental functions added. We have found that our technology is taking electronics more and more into non-electronic industry, non-electronic applications. And that generally a wide range of our semiconductor technology must be focused on to provide a total solution. Where we're using just one technology, we can work with a customer and have him define the requirements as suggested here. And once he has defined requirements, we can do the design and provide a product form at the appropriate time. But in order to interface with these non-electronic type of environments and provide inputs on a broad range of technology, we've created a small but effective engineering group to work with people in applying our advanced integrated circuit technology and all of our semiconductor technology to back up, trading the various alternatives and trade-offs and making recommendations that include a projection or conscious appraisal of the trends over the next 3 or 4 years to provide the customer with the best solution and total solution to his requirement, in our opinion, in our judgment. This is one way to get started. We have used this small group of people with some of the motor firms quite effectively and getting started some of the single function or single problem requirements that I showed on an earlier slide. This is one way to do it. In summary, I think the semiconductor industry is eager and has a lot of momentum to serve the type of requirements in the markets which you present. I think it's pointed out and suggested it's wholly not within the control of the U.S. semiconductor firms. I think timeliness and application is important. But I don't think we have an extremely long time before these applications can be effectively maintained in a competitive worldwide market. I think the consumer will see around him in the next few years quite a bit of electronics in a non-entertainment fashion and will accept and demand electronics. I think the advanced integrated circuit technology provides the principal thrust and will be the main thrust for solving the automotive problems if electronics are going to be used, but these must be coupled properly with the mechanical or electromechanical or metallurgical devices in the car. In closing, I'd say that we at TI are eager to go to the dance. We plan to go to the dance. And we're looking for a partner. We don't intend to sit in the bed.
Thank you.